Island.
Yo, this is M1 from Dead Press.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from The Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance. Down with this rotten-ass system.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you. Bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. News, views, and hip-hop.
Peace and love. This is Azeem. You're listening to Hard Knock Radio. Real radio. From the concrete up. All the way to the sun. Keep shining, y'all. One love.
What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. I'm Anita Johnson. Have you ever walked away from a conversation feeling angry and frustrated, or given up hope of being able to effectively communicate your thoughts to others because you've been misunderstood? Join me in this interview with Daniel Ellenberg as he talks about ways to create more emotionally intelligent personal relationships. Daniel Ellenberg, PhD, is the president of Relationships That Work and vice president of the Rewire Leadership Institute, an organization that helps individuals, teams, and organizations thrive in the business world. He is the founder and director of Strength with Heart Men's Group and Workshops, and co-author of Lovers for Life, Creating Lasting Passion, Trust and True Partnership, which he co-wrote with his wife, Judith Bell. He has spent over 10,000 hours facilitating groups and workshops over the last quarter century and wrote his PhD dissertation on how men can experience greater inner strength and positive relationships by transcending limited aspects of traditional male roles. He has presented at major conferences on radio, television, and other venues. He is also the founding member of the Men's Counseling Guild, a group of men who facilitate men's groups and workshops that began in 1985. Daniel, welcome to the program. And a lot of your work is centered around effective emotional communication. Specifically, you help individuals achieve emotionally intelligent personal relationships. Explain for our listeners what that means. What is an emotionally intelligent personal relationship? Describe the crux of this for our listeners.
Well, I would say it's a confluence of people's ability to know themselves, you know, which is self-awareness, which is an intrapersonal within oneself, and then their willingness to be honest, which is interpersonal. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like how do we develop self-awareness? And as one neuropsychologist said about self-awareness, he said, Mother Nature has not seen fit to invest much neural architecture in self-awareness. Mm. You know, and so, you know, I think as a species, we're beginning to develop some, but we are knee-high to a grasshopper when it comes to knowing ourselves. And one of the challenges is that our behavior reflects our, I would say, more somewhere between awareness and lack of awareness, and we tend to kind of act out our unconscious in the world. So we don't have to look that far to see the repercussions of unconsciousness. Mm-hmm. And so it's challenging to look within and to see, hey, you know, there are parts of myself that can be destructive, can be hateful, jealous, all kinds of shadowy things, as well as being loving and caring and compassionate. Mm-hmm. But it takes courage to look within, and courage is an area I've been super interested in, because, you know, courageous action always involves some type of risk. So it takes courage to look within, and it also takes courage to be honest about what you're actually thinking and feeling, you know, and with other people. Because I always think that if people come off smelling like roses, then they're not telling their whole truth.
Right.
Yeah, because we're a mixture of different potentials. So I think that emotionally intelligent relationships, you know, are such that people are taking responsibility for themselves in a deeper way and willing to be honest about that. And from that place, they can be more self-compassionate, recognizing that as human beings, we all suffer, right, and that we need to be kind to ourselves and recognize that we're not so different. We have a human brain, we're part of the human species, and also be willing to disclose, mm-hmm, you know, to other people, be emotionally open, right, and it is that interface between awareness and disclosure or honesty that emotionally intelligent relationships can emerge.
Right. Emotionally vulnerable, emotionally honest. And I think the thing to recognize here is that everyone has their own truth.
Exactly.
Being in a space where we actually embrace that. And although it may not be your truth, it is theirs. Daniel, the other thing that you mentioned is courage or being courageous. Define that for our listeners as you see it in regards to emotionally intelligent personal relationships.
Well, it comes from the French word courage, which means heart or innermost sanction or sanctum. You know, and so I look at courage as as a process that it begins with a deeply held value. And so, for example, if I value connection, that's my value. But it's a value is a path. It's a direction. It's not something that's accomplishable. That's not really a word, but you get the point. And so we have goals that emerge from our values. You know, those are kind of direct actions that we can look, was I successful in this goal? Was I not successful? Is there something I can do to course correct, you know, in that? And there's an experience of risk in doing so. So, for example, if it's connection and you like someone, you want to be closer with them, and you can acknowledge, you know, a desire to have a deeper connection, or that there's something in the way of that connection and the willingness to disclose that. And so there's a risk in doing so because you don't know how the other person's going to respond. You know, right? Are they going to be open to that? Or are they going to not be have the same type of interest? Mm-hmm. So there's a risk. And at the same time, you have to have some level of confidence that you'll be successful. Confidence, faith. Mm-hmm. And so if you had no confidence, there's no way you take the risk. You know, so then you decide, okay, I'm going to choose to do so, and then you take an action, you know, and then the action is in the service of fulfilling that value. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that courage is something that is we often speak about in terms of a fireman or firewoman running into a burning building, but really, in general, the type of courage that is more common for us human beings is interpersonal. Mm-hmm. And I've actually been involved with some research on interpersonal courage. You know, and so each day, each of us face a variety of circumstances where we have choices about, you know, whether, you know, what do we want to express? What do we want? What outcomes do we want? Excuse me. And how willing are we to speak up for those? And obviously, you know, there are different skill levels that people have in terms of expressing themselves. So I think part of it is really learning, you know, certain skills that maximize the probability of having successful outcomes. Mm. You know, and I think that courage ultimately is putting us face to face with our own human vulnerabilities. Mm. And that willingness to show up, beauty, warts and all, is what defines a person as, you know, courageous.
Right. And then also the way in which we view communication or the relationships, that the type of relationships that we want to have, will be what fosters whether or not they're healthy. You know, I wanted to ask you this question as it pertains to personal relationships or having these really emotionally intelligent, healthy personal relationships. Many times we're at odds on how to communicate effectively. And when we think about male and female relationships or female to female, male to male relationships, there's this level of power struggle. I wanted to get your perspective on how does power struggle of communication restrict one's ability to have emotionally intelligent personal relationships?
Well, power struggles are based on an experience of threat. You know, and so as human beings, our first order of business, it tends to be an unconscious one, is we appraise or assess safety versus threat. And when their perception is this is a threat, we're going to go into some level of defense, fight, flight, freeze, or appease. Mm-hmm. And that's where our power struggles lie. If someone feels really safe and connected, they're not going to be in a power struggle. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the challenge is that power struggles are not necessarily uniform. In other words, that you can feel safe with a person, then something happens, something gets triggered, you know, and your whole kind of threat survival system gets activated. And then we respond react very differently than when we're feeling safe. So part of the power struggle has to do with, in terms of ameliorating or shifting or resolving that, has to do with a person's, again, ability to self-reflect and go, like, what's really getting triggered in me? You know, what am I really feeling threatened about?
But isn't that a level of being vulnerable? And can one be vulnerable and safe at the same time? Is that a false narrative?
You know, again, that's a great question. I tend to think in terms of continuums rather than black and white.
Okay.
You know, it's like, you know, either or. And so a person can feel, you know, safe enough to be vulnerable, because when you think about vulnerable, what does it mean? It means openness to attack.
Right.
You know, so obviously you don't want to be vulnerable, and we're not wired to be vulnerable when we feel our survival is at stake. I mean, that is naturally going to activate defensive reactions. But of course, as you were saying a moment earlier, people are different, and people are differently wired in terms of what threatens them. You know, so I think that, again, a person's ability to go inward, what's really getting threatened in me? So you're really doing a kind of an emotional archaeology,
right,
getting to know yourself better. And generally, what the threats have to do with our beliefs about ourselves, i.e., you know, how significant we believe we are, how competent we believe we are, how lovable we believe we are. And so someone not returning an email might trigger the significance button.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for somebody, like, I don't really matter, this person's ignoring me, and that kind of thing. And then go into a whole narrative, you know, about that. The vulnerability involves both the willingness to look within, because sometimes it means, you know, looking at yourself and discovering things that you would rather not, or at least some cherished view of yourself would rather not see as, you know, a part of who you are. You know, it's like what Jung called the shadow, the parts of ourselves that we do not consciously or unconsciously accept, and we reject them. But the problem is, what we reject, you know, in ourselves tends to grow larger and loom larger and become more powerful and poignant and has greater negative impact. You know, so, you know, my hope is that we really, as a species, you know, learn to, you know, to look more within. And that does involve some vulnerability, and certainly, you know, the willingness to express to another person interpersonally, that obviously involves vulnerability. Like, what you did hurt my feelings.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of hard to acknowledge. And when you're talking about the power struggle, you know, deal with it, you know, you're going to acknowledge to someone that your feelings were hurt and in a power struggle with them?
No.
I mean, but you might be, and then it's a question of, are you going to be courageous enough and maybe wise enough to recognize, well, this is a person who could potentially kind of get off it if I get off it.
Right.
You know, and so it becomes a question of, you know, who first? You know, how do we get over this, you know, these power struggles? And, you know, it's challenging, both on an individual level and obviously on a planetary level. You know, we are dealing with massive levels of offense and defense. It's a pretty frightening times in which we live.
Mm-hmm. And again, that is the voice of Daniel Ellenberg, PhD. He is the president of Relationships That Work and vice president of the Rewire Leadership Institute, an organization that helps individuals, teams, and companies thrive in the business world. Today here on Hard Knock Radio, we've decided to take a bit of a break from the world of Trump and all that comes with him, be it Syria, be it executive orders, immigration policies such as travel ban, or increased raids across the country. Tomorrow we'll pick up that conversation again, but I think it's important for our mental sanity to, at various times, take a break and consider self and the ways in which we communicate. Sometimes communication can be in a space of increased war within ourselves and others. And I think the work of Daniel Ellenberg is intriguing in the sense that it's about helping us be effective in our communication and our perspective as it pertains to the way in which we interact with others. And today here on Hard Knock Radio, we've been discussing ways to create more emotionally intelligent personal relationships. Something that you said that struck a chord with me was looking within and then also exploring our own insecurities before we make decisions on the way in which we communicate to someone. And this is important and very significant for me right now, because recently I had a friend share with me certain things that I should ask myself before engaging with people, in particular relationships that are really intimate, which my friend said, what do I know, what don't I know, and what do I need to know? And many times we're acting on our own insecurities, or, you know, and you said, you know, like sometimes, what was the thing you said that was really interesting that made me, that triggered that in my mind for me? It was like, you know, people might be, you might be responding like, oh, the email. There we go. That was because I feel like everyone does that. Everyone goes there, you haven't responded to my text or you haven't responded to the email, but they just might be busy.
Right.
It might, right. 9 times out of 10, it has nothing to do with you. My question to you, especially when we're talking about developing emotionally intelligent personal relationships with people, break it down a bit more by expressing some of the things that we're doing wrong and what might be a more effective model or method that we could employ in order to get to this point where we have these emotionally intelligent personal relationships.
Great question. Yeah, my wife and I are actually currently writing a book on mindful conversations. And so we've done a lot of work in terms of how do you do this? And I think the first part of it is really the pre-work. A lot of times when people are upset about something, they either stay mum, you know, or they blurt. And they're not actually doing the kind of cautionary preparation that will maximize the probability of having successful outcomes. And note, I don't say anything about certainty, because certainty and human relations have very little to do with each other, as it turns out. So we're looking at how do we build up the possibility of that. And so the pre-work, you know, may involve looking at, like, what do I really want? Like, what outcome do I want? You know, what, begin with the end in mind. So if I want to feel more connected to a person, or I want to have a better result in terms of a project that we're collaborating on, you know, or if I want to end a relationship, or if I want to, you know, be understood better, you know, to actually go like, you know, what do I want? You know, when all is said and done at the end of this conversation or these series of conversations, how do I want to walk away? How do I want to feel? And how do I want to behave during the conversation? Mm-hmm. And so you do that kind of work, and you're looking at, like, well, what's the nature of this relationship?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but because the way in which we behave will dictate the outcome.
It will influence the outcome.
Okay.
I just respond to, like, the word dictate, because it involves another person.
Okay.
You know, and then that's the uncertainty part of it, let alone your own reactions.
Right.
You know, and so regarding that other person, I think it's useful to go, like, what do I know about this person?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I know about how he or she tends to respond or react when some important matter gets raised to them? And so you're thinking about that. You're thinking about the nature of the relationship. You know, is it a situation where I'm managing up, managing down? Is it on the same level as a personal relationship? Is it a professional relationship? So you spend some time asking yourself, you know, some basic questions, you know, about that. You know, I could provide some of the questions for you, for your audience, that you could potentially put online that may be helpful for them to look at. And
absolutely,
obviously we don't have the time to go into all of that right now.
Well, I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I can definitely do that for the listeners, put that on our website.
Yeah, I'm happy to provide that, because, you know, I've been working in helping people in personal and professional relationships. By the way, our other website is called Rewire Leadership. It's for more organizations, organizational transformation. So I think that you know, doing the preparation is really important. And then there's the question of how do I actually initiate the conversation? And so we have a basic formula, you know, in terms of initiating, that it's basically going along with the vowels, A, E, I, O, U. So the first step is getting agreement. So this overcomes, helps people overcome the blurter syndrome. Hey, there's something I'd like to talk with you about. Is this a good time?
Mm-hmm.
And if the person responds, what's it about? My response would be, I just want to make sure we have time to talk about it. I'm happy to tell you what it is, but I don't want to just say it, you know, if this isn't a good time to talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're creating a structure for that. And then E is end in mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, begin with the end in mind, which is what I was alluding to earlier, exactly. You know, and so, hey, I want to talk with you about it because I want to find a way for us to work better together, more smoothly, you know, on this project, have a better accountability system, whatever that happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I is for importance, because, you know, you're important. You know, person for me, if it's business, you're an important stakeholder for me, or you're my mate or whatever, brother or sister, you know, and you matter to me. So you're literally telling the person that they're significant, and hey, guess what? People like to feel significant. It doesn't get more basic than that. And then, oh, which you could use or not use as obstacles. Hey, I want to just, you know, talk about this because, you know, I'd like to have as open and clear and kind of conversation as possible. Sometimes we've gotten defensive with each other. I don't want to do that as much as possible. Some people kind of react to that step, FYI, because they go, oh, that's going to make things worse. And, you know, obviously people are going to use whatever elements of whatever they learn in their own particular way. So my attitude about these things is make it your own. It's not like any formula is just that, and it can be changed to fit the person and the circumstances. And you is for us. So I'd like to just lay out how I'm saying, and then I'm totally open to hearing, you know, what your experience is.
Mm-hmm.
So note, I barely said anything about the content in this. What we're trying to do is create sacred ground and basically trying to create as much as possible a feeling of safety in going into a conversation, because essentially, we're wired, you know, we're kind of these anxious beings, as early Darwinians say, we're kind of all the descendants of anxious ancestors, you know, because the ones who were chill were kind of eaten up. Hey, it's cool, man. You know, the ones who were like, oh, we're anxious, what could go wrong, you know?
Well, defensiveness is wired within us. That's just a given.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It is. It is kind of interesting that every country seems to have a Department of Defense, but they don't have a Department of Offense.
Right.
You know, that's a whole other matter. You know, and so you're creating a sacred ground, you know, in these conversations. And again, we have to keep coming back to courage, because it does take courage, you know, to do this. And then there's, you know, how do you move through the conversation? And it's, I think I look at conversations like a river, you know, like the river has an ending potentially in the ocean, and that's where I want to arrive at. But there are tributaries that come off the river. And so in the conversation, the other person may bring something up, or it may remind you of something. You take a tributary off of that. But it's important to keep focusing on where you want to go. So you don't want to go too far off that. So sometimes another content area comes up in a conversation, and you can kind of put it in the parking lot and say, hey, let's talk about that one later, but let's stay focused on this and kind of keep course correcting, you know, in the direction of what you want to accomplish, which is the end in mind you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, you know, it takes levels of practice and skill. This is not an exact science. Not that there are too many exact sciences, but this is an area where, as I've seen, people can become increasingly facile and competent, you know, at having the conversations, but it takes practice for sure.
Right. So, you know, moving forward, Daniel, I kind of want to focus also more on some of the work that you're doing with your institute, Wellspring. And the work there is really about putting people in a space to obtain more happiness, more love, more wisdom, and just overall having a better life and making the world a better place. And earlier I mentioned how our brain is wired. It's wired in the space of being defensive, right? Immediately, like, you know, that's where we go to, right? And
yeah.
The awkward thought is that in many ways it's not effective, but for a lot of people it's our safe space, right?
Absolutely.
Talk a bit about our wiring and the ways in which you see it prohibiting our ability to be in a space where we are able to obtain that greater happiness and love and wisdom that you teach there at the Institute.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're wired to survive. We're not wired to thrive. Experiences, negative experiences in particular, that feel threatening to an individual, to an organism, to a being, get encoded immediately in the brain because they represent a threat to survival. And since we're wired to survive and reproduce, you know, for the species, you know, we are particularly prone to pay attention to things that will take us out. We're not as prone to pay attention to things that will help us thrive. So positive experiences often get glossed over. They don't get encoded in the brain. But negative experiences do. And the basic idea is this. There are two types of errors we have. One I call it type one, which is there is no survival situation going on, but we react as if there is. And type two, if there is a survival situation going on, but we react as if there isn't. What's worse? I mean, obviously, a type two is much worse. Mm-hmm. And so we're prone to perceive many situations that actually have no threat to our survival as a threat to our survival. You know, so the idea is that better to have momentary jumps in anxiety, you know, and then go, oh, it's not, like when we're walking down a trail and there's some squiggly object there and you jump and then you go, oh, it's a stick. But you definitely, it's better to misperceive a stick for a snake than a snake for a stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why we're prone toward negativity, and you know, evolutionary psychology started calling this negativity bias.
Mm-hmm.
So we're biased to the negative there.
But it's so much more exhausting, even existing in that particular state. Constantly.
Absolutely. But again, you know, if you're wrong one time, you know, you die.
Mm-hmm.
And since we're really wired to survive, you know, we're constantly looking for threats out there, even when they don't exist. I think about this Mark Twain quote where he said, "I've suffered a great many catastrophes. A few of them actually happened."
Right, right. How do we rewire our brain to not do that? Or would that be going against our instinct and potentially putting us in greater danger?
Well, this is actually the, you know, what underlies many spiritual practices and psychological or psycho-spiritual practices about rewiring the brain. And I'm a very strong believer in that, you know, because I think that there are ways to really trust ourselves,
mm-hmm.
Like there actually is a threat going on, and to calm our nervous system so we're not so jumpy. Now, obviously, people are born with different temperaments. Some people are just born more anxious than others, and they have different types of work, you know, to do. But certainly there are, you know, different practices at Wellspring Institute. There's a whole bunch of different practices.
And it's not gender specific, because some people might say women worry more than men.
I don't know. You know, I think it shows up in different ways.
Okay.
That's a whole other conversation about gender.
And we're not going to get you in trouble with that question either.
I've gotten in so much trouble in my life, and I've survived it. You know, at least I'm not one to say I'm not going to talk about something that's controversial because some people are going to be politically incorrect to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a whole other matter. But we can really rewire our brains, and I think it's an important question. Like, will that be on some level detrimental to our health?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say no, because I actually think that, you know, we each have a kind of natural defense system, you know, within us that is important to, you know, keep active. You know, people who are impervious to fear tend to win Darwin Awards, you know, which are, you know, taking themselves out of the gene pool by doing stupid things. You know, so fear is an important part of life, but we have too much of it in
mm-hmm.
general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so meditation, you know, different types of kind of psychological practices, which again we don't have time to go into right now, can calm the nervous system so that you actually can pay attention to actual threats when they come up, but not constantly conjure them up when they're not there.
Right, right. I find it really intriguing to understand your journey. You know, I've read up on, you know, your work, and, you know, whether it be this whole conversation around emotionally intelligent personal relationships, you've done a lot of work within the men's circle in a sense of men healing, being better communicators, the way in which men interact with the world. Explain for our listeners your particular journey, and how did you first get started, and what brought you to this point where you wanted to know about this level of communication and having these more personal relationships, not just with individuals and other people, but also with yourself?
Well, I think as a child, I would be really tuned into what people weren't saying. You know, I just felt I lived in a world of hypocrisy.
Explain.
And people weren't, in general, very open and direct about what they were actually experiencing. And I was very aware of kind of defensive reactions. I didn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, felt very isolated and alone, despite the fact that I had friends. I mean, I didn't look like somebody who was kind of on the fringes, so to speak, but inside I felt like I was on the fringes because there were things I kind of knew were going on, but nobody talked about it. And that was very disturbing to me. And I found that a lot of that, in terms of being male, you know, was kind of, to some degree, gender specific. I mean, not that women were so forthcoming about what their internal experience, but certainly much more so than males were. And I was not one of these guys who was more on the kind of like the soft male side per se. I mean, I played sports and I was pretty active physically and all, but I always felt kind of separate in a certain way. And I became increasingly frustrated with kind of male behavior, you know, and then as I started learning more about this, oh, there's something called this men's movement, I started getting interested in that in the probably like 1980 or something like that, you know, in the early 80s. And then it just started sort of growing from there. I started meeting guys who were interested in becoming more real with themselves and with each other, and I found a sense of brotherhood, you know, in that. And it's interesting, the first show I ever did on KPFA was in like 1983 or something like that. There was a guy named Sam Jolty who had a show called The Gentle Joy of Brotherhood. You know, and I remember one question he asked me. He said, you know, some people say men don't have feelings. Do men have feelings? And I thought, oh my God, I mean, even to ask that question. You know, like, you know, that could even be out there.
Right.
You know, and all the jokes about men, like men really don't have feelings. They just have, you know, interest in sex and violence and cars and stuff like that. It's just so trite,
right,
and old.
Right.
But, you know, old habits die hard.
Right, right. Well, how does your work challenge the concepts of traditional men's roles or what manhood is?
Well, I think that, you know, at the core, there, you know, we men are human,
right?
And we're driven by, you know, our desires to feel significant, you know, to feel competent, to feel lovable, you know, to be connected. And there are certain kind of cultural myths that have been handed down, and we internalize them. I have a term I call it psychoosmosis. You know, we internalize the external teachings through the permeable membranes of the brain, and once inside, they kind of coagulate, so to speak, and they form characters or characteristics. You know, and so we're really working with how do we actually transform the kind of unbeneficial characteristics we learn that lead toward things like war, you know, violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in one of my men's groups last night, I've been leading men's groups now for 33 years, there was a theme of potential violence toward women. Not that the guys in the group have been physically violent toward women, but that, you know, it's obviously something that goes on in the world, and it's a horrible thing. And, you know, as much as things change, you know, they stay the same, you know. And how do you intervene in a kind of crazy system where people, when they feel powerless, attempt to be powerful by exacting violence, you know, on others, in this case, in terms of women, you know, who are not physically as strong in general. I think that we really need to, as a people, have a North Star, you know, and what is it that we want to create? And this is, again, a kind of end in mind. And so for me, you know, I'm constantly working with my own inner, you know, hatred and violence, you know, that, you know, I think, you know, that my current person I focus on all too much is none other than Donald Trump, you know. And so I have to work with my own hatred, because I do hate many of the things he stands for, and I can feel that desire to just wipe him out. You know, I wish he didn't exist, that's true. But on another level, it's like, you know, that's probably not the best approach. Certainly you can resist without hatred, mm-hmm. You know, and resist we must. But it's like, really, for me, working with, you know, the part of me that just gets furious, you know, about things. But then how do you take fury, the furies, and calm the system enough to take wise action? Mm-hmm. See, it doesn't mean not taking action at all, you know, but it does mean taking wise and skillful action. And I don't think that we change things through hatred, you know. So I'm saying that because I'm not some you know, master evolved enlightened being, that I don't fall prey to those more base human impulses, you know. But nonetheless, you know, as human beings, and I believe that I'm a student teacher, so to speak. I'm a student of this, and I'm a teacher of it. And I think that part of what my own teaching is about is to acknowledge my own vulnerabilities and to acknowledge the gaps, you know, in my own development, you know, for the purpose of one, you know, being real about that, you know, being as authentic as I can be, and inspiring other people to be real themselves about it. And, you know, also, the kind of like, you know, we're on a path, and there's, you know, certain people who increasingly are on a path, you know, of peace and, you know, creating collaboration and harmony and overcoming divisiveness.
Right. Well, I just want to jump in and say that for me also, peace doesn't necessarily mean weakness, and then the work is constant. So as you say, you're a student teacher of this, the work is constant, and people are constantly evolving. That would be the hope, right? So
for sure.
I want to let folks know that I've been speaking with Daniel Ellenberg today here on Hard Knock. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Is there any last thing you might want to say about around people, how people can get in contact with you, so on and so forth?
Well, sure. You can email me, Daniel@rewireleadership. That's rewireleadership.com, or Daniel@relationships. That's plural. work.com, or 415-883-5600, 415-883-5600. And I just want to tell you, Anita, that I've really appreciated you and your sentiment and your questions and your energy, you know, in this, because I just feel like you're coming from a good place.
Well, thank you. I would like to believe that I'm definitely coming from a good place. Again, I want to remind folks that I've been speaking with Daniel Ellenberg, PhD. We've been discussing emotional intelligent relationships here on Hard Knock. Briefly, I want to let folks know that his next workshop is scheduled to be May 22nd, 24th. This will be at CIIS in the city of San Francisco. We will post this information also on our website. I want to mention this because you can save $50 on all levels of registration for the workshop taking place May 22nd through the 24th when you use the code KPFA at checkout. And one easy way to actually find this would be going to the registration page, would be to visit www.ciis.edu/p3events. That's www.ciis.edu/p3events to find social intelligence for leaders on May 22nd through the 24th. Again, this is Hard Knock Radio. I'm Anita Johnson. Stay tuned.
If I ever took a loss, I learned a lesson. I won't ever think I'm better than the next man. I've been down before to come up, I ain't stressing. Baby, I'm too busy counting all these blessings.
Conectados, every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Top, Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, rah, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Yeah, learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop.
netherworld of American prisons, one must jettison any medical assumptions one brings in from the so-called free world. We've been conditioned to see nurses as sweet sources of solace and doctors as people dedicated to healing the sick and easing our pain. In prison, new rules govern medicine and care. Here, money is master. The ill are all but ignored. This may seem harsh, but I must assure you, reality is even harsher. Recently, I wrote of jailhouse lawyer Dennis Solo McKeithen and his battle to get examined and treated for the painful nerve disorder known as shingles. As I read this trial transcript, I found the remarkable comments and questions by the judge instructive. He asked essentially if the company hired by the DOC to provide health care had a conflict because, as a private company, its interests were to make money by refusing to provide medications needed by prisoners. The witness denied his suggestion, but the judge had hit a nerve. From 2015 to today, my lawyers and I have been demanding real treatment for my hepatitis C infection. The DOC initially filed a false affidavit which justified a U.S. magistrate's dismissal of my own suit. The DOC argued that my hepatitis was fine, that it could go years without treatment. A federal judge disagreed and held a hearing which showed the affidavit was false, and months later declared the DOC its so-called protocol was unconstitutional. The DOC fought back, arguing that my hep C was at a low level. The judge again disagreed, declared the protocol unconstitutional a second time, and ordered me treated. The DOC essentially ignored the court order for close to 2 months, and earlier this week subjected me to more testing. Well, the results just came back. Not only do I have advanced hepatitis C, I have cirrhosis of the liver called F4 because the DOC didn't want to spend the money to treat my infection. The DOC said it would cost them $600 million. It may only cost me my life. From In Prison Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
On the move. I want to thank Mr. Louis Farrakhan and the millions more for the kind invitation to join y'all here. As we gather in person or electronically, we do so in a time of peril. We do so in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, when the state showed us all that they don't give a damn about black life.
The angry leaders that frame Mumia are the same names blamed for Hurricane Katrina. See, the levees would break, the waters would crush, and President Bush, he would forsake the poor and oppressed. So just from the smaller Katrinas, we experience a deadly effects in all arenas. Every year, public schools miseducate the poor, destroying any chance to advance and get more, man. Taxes pay for the oppression we experience. Police too brutal for me to mention, it gets really tense. Consumers of the media filled with ignorance, poisoning our minds with gimmicks and violent images. The daily hurricanes of hate and indifference experience behind the prison gate on some condition. The courthouse laws and rules they reveal are threats to our welfare and not tools of our will, so just.
But every day of our lives, we see small, but no less lethal, Hurricane Katrinas. Every year, in public schools, millions of black, Latino, and poor kids are miseducated, thereby destroying, as surely as any hurricane, their life hopes and chance.
We need the boom in the millions to bring true social power to civilians. Don't gotta swallow the bullshit from the one that you follow and free your mind from the mud that you wallow in.
Save the people. Hey, from the confusion of social repression and destitution, there is only one solution to this intrusion, the movement of millions to bring forth a revolution. Now who's in? Those engaged in the struggle for freedom and justice and the liberation of political prisoners. We need those dedicated to change so that rich and poor children are educated the same. Yeah, we need the movement to resist the fraction that brought you patriot acts but not patriotic actions. We need the movement that ignites, not divides us, despite all the trauma, cause my people are survivors.
We need a movement of millions to build true social power, to free our minds and our bodies from the mud that we languish in. We need a movement of millions to transform our current social reality of repression and destitution. We need a movement of millions to bring back light to the eyes of our people, to engage in a struggle for freedom, for justice, and for liberation. We need a movement of millions of the poor, of workers, of women, of youth, of students, of prisoners, of all those dedicated to change, to build independent organizations that can't be bought or sold and will do the work necessary to be free, 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 free.
Ha, hey, 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 ho, 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 Hard Knock Radio, East, West, North, South, conectados, every set, every hood, barrio to barrio, y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs, one love, we know where y'all at, hot, brown buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415's bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from the hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side, learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Thank you. tuned.
Hi, my name is Gary, and I'm the program host for KBOA Radio's Swingin' Country program, and I'm asking for your help. I'm not asking for your money, or your vote, or your email address. I'm asking you to sing. I don't have to tell you times are tough. The coronavirus, unemployment, protests in the street, the airwaves are